This episode of The Overwhelmed Brain is brought to you by your subconscious mind that somehow knew you should tune in today. Are you annoyed by affirmations? Does it make you tired when people come up to you and say, "Think positively"? Just because there's gum in your hair doesn't mean you can't go out on that date. Here, stick your head in the freezer. I'll be back in a couple hours and that gum will come right out.
Are you sure about this?
Of course! Remember, think positively!
It's really cold!
If affirmations feel like lies and positive thinking feels like denial, then get ready to start creating the life you've always wanted now. Hello, this is Paul Coliani, personal empowerment coach and host of this show. I almost couldn't say the word empowerment. And this is the personal growth show for the critical thinker. On every episode, we'll talk about practical down-to-earth steps to help you improve your mood and keep you sane in this powerful journey we call life. I want to help you bridge the gap between your emotions and reason, causing you to discover why you do the things you do, and what you can do to reach higher levels of happiness and lower levels of stress and overwhelm. And if you're here to learn more common sense tips to improve your life, well, I'll give you a refund. How much did you pay for this show? I'll give that back to you. Because this is the place for uncommon sense, and that's why it's going to help you learn, heal, grow, and evolve. All right, I want to talk about self-esteem just for a few minutes and where it comes from and what we can do to maybe raise our own levels of self-esteem. My own education in this and my own experience in raising my levels of self-esteem are going to be going into this segment. I am not a PhD in self-esteem whatsoever, but I know what I call street knowledge. Street knowledge is what you gain from real life experience. This is my own definition, my own opinion that what street knowledge is. There's textbook knowledge where you study and go to college and learn all you can. And then there's what I call street knowledge, where you just learn as you go throughout life and do what you think is going to work for you. And when it does work, you get good results and you take those results with you throughout life. And it's raw, you know, it's the real stuff. It's like asking someone out on a date. You never know what it's going to be like until you do it. You can read every book, watch every video, but to actually approach someone and say, "Hey, would you like some coffee sometime?" Or, you know, whatever you say, depending on the situation or where you guys are. And, you know, what are they going to say next? And what if they say no? What if they laugh at me? Or what if they say, "Well, I'm already married"? I mean, there's so many scenarios. And, you know, every book in the world's not going to cover every scenario. So what do? You gain some street knowledge or street wisdom and just do it and find out what happens. And this is kind of what I've committed myself to do, is gain as much street knowledge as I possibly can. Because I don't know about you, but no matter how many personal growth books or psychology books or videos or, you know, wherever the education comes from, you know, no matter how much you learn, you never really learn until you're doing it, at least where it gets burned into your brain. And this is where I come from when I talk about self-esteem. Because I remember, you know, I was, 16 years old in high school. I had long hair. I was one of those skateboarders, and there were these cliques, you know, the skateboarding clique. There was about, 10 of us. And then there was a couple break dancers. You know, this is in the 80s. And then there were the jocks, and then the honor students, and then the pretty girls, and then, you know, all these different cliques in school. And it probably is still like that. And then there were, you know, the potheads. And I don't mean to sound derogatory, but that's what we called them in school. We just had these different cliques. And I don't think I ever saw the group of pretty girls and called them pretty girls. I forget what we called them, but they were the probably the ones that I could never date. because I was not of that caliber, or at least that's how I felt. That's how I felt, and that was my self-esteem. That was my self-confidence, too. My take on self-esteem is that you gain self-esteem by your measure of self-worth. And you gain your measure of self-worth when you're younger from those who cared for you and those you were around most often, your friends and family. And when you did something wrong, or what they deemed as wrong, they put you down for it or yelled at you or gave you some sort of discipline or punishment or something that made you feel less than you're actually worth. And that's an important signifier there, because what you're actually worth is usually more than you're given credit for when you're a child, because parents are children that grew up, which means they took their own self-worth and self-esteem into being a parent, and now what they feel about themselves sometimes trickles on to their children, or most of the time. Some parents are really good, and they don't allow their own values or beliefs or own thoughts about themselves, you know, bleed or trickle into their children's lives, but sometimes that's hard, because if you're going to be yourself around your children, they pick up on it. In fact, children pick up on more than you could possibly imagine. And you're probably saying, oh, no, I realize they do. If you have children, you probably realize, yes, they pick up on everything. But they are brilliant. I mean, children are brilliant. And the reason I say that is because they don't have all the conscious filters in place yet, like what happens to us adults when we grow up and we put all these conscious filters and we start closing off segments of the world and start living from a place of, okay, now I know what to do here. Now I know what to do there. I know how to get to work. And then we follow these patterns. But children, they have less of these patterns. They don't follow the same rules, and they're more free to explore and understand the world differently, for sure. But they really are brilliant. They're highly observant. And they don't even know they're doing it. They just pick up their sponges. And so you probably know this, but if you don't, there's the info. There's the 411 on that. So, you know, children are brilliant. So what do they do? They pick up on us. They sense what mood we're in. They sense incongruence, which is when your intentions don't match your behavior, or your body language doesn't match what you're saying. They pick up on this stuff, and they're very good at detecting a lot of what we do and say. And when they sense this incongruence, when they sense something's not right, they might take it with them and become us. Meaning, if we tend to lie, they may tend to lie. If we tend to hide the truth or get into or be in denial, they might get into denial in several ways as they grow up and things. And then we might discipline them for being just like us. But let's roll back a little bit here and talk about self-worth. I mean, where does that begin? It begins as soon as you feel bad about yourself, in my opinion. Because you never not feel good about yourself until you feel bad about yourself, because now you have the polar opposite of how you probably have felt up to a point. Meaning, you're born and you're an infant and you feel pretty good as long as your needs are getting met and you're getting nurtured and supported. And then every time you cry, someone comes along and feeds you or cares for you. And there's a lot of taking care of at that point. I mean, your needs have to be met. You're an infant. You don't know what else to do. You don't know how to say, hey, I'm hungry. You just cry. And hopefully you have caretakers that go, oh, my baby is crying, or this baby is crying. I'm going to take care of this baby. And then they come and feed or nurture or whatever. But what about when children start talking and then they start talking back? And then they do things that we disagree with because we're adults and we know better and we have patterns that we follow, and that is outside of the pattern. But then we forget that we were children and we did the same thing. And what do we say, what do we do to these children that somehow mess with their self-worth, with how they feel about themselves? Because up to that point, they didn't feel great or bad or anything about themselves. They didn't have an opinion, I'm guessing. I don't remember my own childhood like that young, but I'm guessing that before a child is disciplined, he probably didn't feel anything. He probably just felt like, hey, this is a new world. I'm experiencing it. Great. Until the discipline comes. And how do we discipline without lowering their self-worth? And I'm not talking about raising children in this episode. I'm talking about how we were raised. We were raised with certain people in our life that disciplined, yelled, made the rules, or whatever. And at one point, we suddenly felt bad about ourselves. And that's where the most important part of all of this is at what point did we feel bad? At what point did you feel bad about yourself as a child? Think about that. If I were to think about at what point I felt bad, you know, however you define bad, when did I feel bad about myself? You know, I would think I was 4 years old when my stepfather was holding my arms. He was on top of me, holding my arms down and rubbing my soiled underwear in my face. I was 4, and he's teaching me a lesson, and suddenly I feel bad about myself. I feel worthless, and I feel worthless because I'm supposed to know better. My 4 years of existence on this earth, and I'm supposed to know better. Yes, that was a little sarcastic. And no, I'm not still suffering emotionally from that. I've actually done a lot of healing around that. And just a side note, I don't know if you've ever heard this episode, but I actually went back to my childhood home where that happened in Massachusetts. And I saw the owners outside and I said, you know, I used to live here. And they were like, really? I was like, yeah, when I was a child. And they said, come on in. I was like, really? So I came in and I remember going in there and he showed me around. He showed me the wall they tore down. And I was really impressed. It looked like a much, much brighter, nicer home than I remember. But I remember the location of where what I would call that abuse took place. I remember that location, and I was able to just, for a moment, be silent in that very spot. And at the time, I was 4, so this house was huge. But there I am I think I was in my 30s when I did this, and I was able to reach the ceiling. I just held one of the beams of the ceiling, looking down at that spot that I remembered. And I just saw myself, and suddenly was there for myself, as I've talked about when you visit yourself as a child. I actually did it physically, and I was there. And it was amazing. It was just incredible, and it was very healing. So I am so grateful for those people. If you're listening on Prospect Street, I appreciate you guys, and thank you. I don't know if they know who I am, but just in case. But that was a wonderful thing, and that really helped the healing process. And it is something that I talk about as far as when you want to heal from things from your past. Because, like I said, think about your past. What made you feel worthless? What lowered your perception of yourself where you go, wow, I don't feel worthy. I don't feel like I'm appreciated, or I don't feel loved. Maybe I'm not worthy enough to be loved. These are the beliefs of a very few years on earth. When you're born and you have very few years on earth, and you start developing beliefs like that, and then you take them with you, like low self-worth turns into low self-esteem. And then you take this low self-esteem into your relationships, into your business, your career. And what do you do with it? You find survival mechanisms, you find coping mechanisms to make up for this low self-esteem. I mean, we've probably all been there. I know I've been there. And this is where I'm going is I've been there. I've been in a place of very low self-esteem, which is having a low perception of yourself, having a, how is the best way to describe it? Feeling like you're inferior, feeling like you're not, your opinion is not worth expressing, feeling like your work is not worth presenting to other people or giving to other people or something like that. It's just like you somehow feel below other people. And this is kind of dangerous thinking because no one is below or above anyone else. We're all at different levels on the scale of, say, education and communication and who's better in a relationship, you know, who's better at treating other people, making money, who makes more money, who has a better job status or job ranking or, you know, all these things that we look at and say, wow, he's better than me because he has a degree from college, or she's better than me because she knows how to articulate herself, or, you know, anyone, when we look at them and say they're better than us in some way. And then, so that makes us afraid to express ourselves. And when you are in this place where you feel inferior in any way, well, first of all, guess what? You're not alone. Because even the most educated, most money, the most talent, all of this stuff, if you wrap that up into one person, there's still going to be those scary vulnerabilities that they're afraid to express. And I know this for a fact because I have clients that are some of them are high status. And all I mean by that is that they might be well known, they might make a lot of money, they might appear very confident. I'm talking about any type of status. They might appear as someone who doesn't seem to have any issues. Yet, we all have issues. I think this is why some people call me to work with me, because they know I'm not going to ask, what? You have issues? I mean, we all have issues. In fact, I told a client recently, I said, the only people that have the least issues are called monks. Because they don't have to deal with relationships. They don't have to deal with work politics. They don't have to deal with regular life. I mean, most of them, I'm sure some do, but for the most part, I mean, when you think of monks, you think of, oh, they have a peaceful day in the temple all day, every day. Let's go sit in the garden. That does sound nice, but I'm not ready to give up what I've created and what I'm a part of in this world to become a monk. So what do I have to do instead? I have to deal with the challenges, and I have to work with the challenges. So let's tie this in to self-esteem. Here's what I want you to do if you want to work on your self-esteem. Step one, and I've said this on another episode or two, about visiting a time in your mind when you were younger. And this is when you first felt less worthy than you actually are. Just go in your mind, close your eyes, and remember a time when you felt less worthy than you actually are. I'm saying that specifically because you are worthy. You are significant. You are important. So go into the past in your mind and just remember when you first felt like you weren't worthy. I mean, somebody may have even said, you're worthless, or you're stupid, or you idiot, why'd you do that? There's a time. I mean, it doesn't have to be in your childhood. It can be when you're older, but think of a time. And if you have that, this is a great subconscious exercise and a meditation at the same time. Closing your eyes, and then the person you are today, visiting that younger version of you and seeing that younger version of you at the time they felt less worth than they actually are. And noticing where they are and what they need. When I do this, I see my small child, me, at 4 years old, being held down. And, you know, I stare into his eyes, and he looks back at me, and I say, "You know what? I'm here for you." And I support and nurture him when he needs it most. And I'm not going to necessarily change this event, because for me, there was a lot of learning that I got from it. But you can if you wanted to. You could go, like, I could go back and pull my stepfather off and kick him in the face. I mean, this is my imagination, so I can imagine anything I want. I'm not doing this for real. I'm just imagining this happen. I could do that. But I'm going to let it happen. But I'm also going to see myself as that child and say, "I'm here for you. And when this is over, I'm still going to be here for you." And then it's going to be over in my mind, and I'm going to nurture and support and say, "You know what? I love you." And no matter what anyone thinks, because some people are sick. Some people are sick, and they're going to make you feel worthless, but I know you're worthy. And that child should trust you right away. But sometimes they don't. Sometimes they need time to know that you're going to show up over and over again, because the more traumatic your childhood was or your younger years were, the more it might take to trust. But you might get an immediate trust, or you might not. This is a little strange technique, but you know, all of this is in our mind anyway, right? All of this is our emotional state and how we feel about things today. So our self-esteem is an emotional state. If we didn't feel bad about ourselves at all, then there would be no need to, you know, do this thing in our mind. And there really isn't. There are other ways to do this, but this is one technique and this is one step. So, you know, step one, visit yourself, nurture yourself. Give yourself the support and comfort that you needed at those times. And I realize there are some really traumatic times maybe in your life, and you don't have to visit those times. Maybe you can visit after those times or other times when you just felt alone or less than you are actually worth. Go back to those times and nurture yourself. That's step one. Step two is, after you do that, come back to today and think about how you may not feel as worthy as you should. I'm going to use that word "should" again, because you should feel worthy. And the reason you should feel worthy is because however you feel about yourself, whether you don't trust yourself, you don't trust your decisions, or you're afraid to speak up because no one will listen, or if they do listen, they'll think you're an idiot or whatever. However you feel about yourself is almost always less than you're actually worth. And what that means is that you're worth more than you think. And I pretty much know that because anyone listening to me now wants to improve themselves. And if you're with people who aren't on a path of self-improvement, I'm just going to throw this out there. If they're not on a path of self-improvement, then do you really believe that you're worth less than them? Anyone who wants to improve themselves is worth more than they actually think they are. And you may feel like you're worth everything, and I love that. If you feel that you're worthy, great. And maybe you do. And if that's the case, you're on the right path, and I want you to keep feeling that way no matter what. Because sometimes you're going to stand up for yourself and you're going to say something and everyone's going to go, "Wow, that's a great idea." And then sometimes people will go, "No, that's a terrible idea." Or, "No, I don't want to hear from you." But that's fine, because you still know you're worthy. If you get to that space inside of you, then you can say anything and no one can really put you down. I mean, it's going to happen. You're going to feel when people put you down, but you can bounce back faster. This is how you build self-esteem, is continuing to bounce back, continuing to try things, the raw things, the street knowledge, where you go up to someone and you ask them out on a date. That's totally an example. Don't really do it unless you want to. But there's other things that you can do. You can talk to your partner, talk to your spouse, and say things that you might have been afraid to say. Because when you do this, and the more you do this, the more you build self-esteem. This is what happens. This is how to build self-esteem. This is step, hold on, man, 2 or 3. And what you do is you say things that might be sort of hard to say. You say things and you do things that might be somewhat bold, but authentically you. Like if you've always wanted to be a ballerina, and maybe you're a guy and you go into the ballet studio and you feel funny and you do it anyway, that could be authentically you. And I'm not making fun of that. I'm being serious. You could want something for yourself, but not do it because you might feel like people look down on you or people might say something or talk about you. So what? My opinion is that we have this one life on this planet, unless you believe in multiple lives or reincarnation, but you know, whatever. But right now, in this body, in this life, hey, we can experience it. Let's go out and experience what there is to experience. Don't limit yourself. Don't limit yourself by other people's perceptions of you, because you really are unlimited. And I don't mean to sound all, hey, this is Tony Robbins, motivation. I really want to say that you're unlimited only to the extent that you stop doing things because of what other people might think of you. And I guarantee you, people who think any less of what you are and who you are have reservations about themselves that they are projecting onto you. You're worthy. There's no doubt about it. So do these steps. I think I'm missing a step. Trying out the raw stuff, getting the street knowledge. Oh, so let me finish my story. You know, I was 16. I was the skateboarder. I had long hair. And I knew that I was not worthy of hanging out with the jocks, hanging out with the pretty girls, hanging out with anyone except other skateboarders and maybe, what they call them, treadheads, the tech school guys. They knew how to fix cars and motorcycles. I just blended in with them well. And they were all nice guys. I mean, not saying anything against anyone. It's just that's where I resonated most. I felt more accepted. But I still had this low self-worth, and I was shy. I was completely an introvert, although I still loved being the center of attention because I loved making people laugh. So in the middle of class, I might do something funny. Well, I look back at it now, and it probably wasn't funny, but back then it was funny at 16, 17. But the one thing that changed things for me, and I've talked about this before, but only on one episode, so you may not have heard it. It's the episode I talked about ego. The one thing that changed for me is I went above and beyond and filled my ego by buying a muscle car. Actually, I think my mom bought me the muscle car, and I started driving that to school. And people were coming up to me going, wow, nice car. And the treadheads, I hope that's not offensive, started coming up to me and say, I was going to buy that car. I saw that sitting in town and I was going to buy it. And so, you know, I had these people that were kind of jealous, kind of envious, and looking at me differently for the first time. And it felt amazing. It felt great. I was like, wow, this is what it feels like to be liked, to be popular, to feel worthy. And I took that lesson with me. I was like, so ego is not a bad thing, because I felt pretty damn good when I was able to fill it. And I don't mean overboard ego. I just mean having a sense of pride in something I am or something I was doing. It sounds so superficial. Get a muscle car, people start looking at you and treating you differently. But it worked because it changed me. And I didn't have that muscle car long. It was only a few months, maybe less than a year. And then I got this, I don't know, crappy station wagon. I was back to normal. But I kept a lot of this feeling from filling my ego that one time. And I took it with me. And I was able to go back to school and talk to people in a way I've never talked to them. Talk to them with confidence. Talk to the same people that I was scared to talk to before. And they appreciated me. And it wasn't because I had a muscle car, because I got rid of the muscle car. And now I was driving some AMC Hornet, I think. Some, I don't know, 83 AMC Hornet. It was ugly and old, and it certainly wasn't anything to show off, but I still had that muscle car in my mind, in my spirit or whatever, my personality. And I took this personality into my conversations and talked with people the way I've never talked to them before. I felt it. So that's like step four, is don't be afraid to fill your ego and be proud of something. Be proud of yourself. Do something that kind of shows off even. You just have to balance it out. And if you listen to the episode on ego where I talk about this, that's what I really want you to do is if you need to boost your self-esteem, first boost your ego. Do something. Be proud of something. Show it off. And then when you bring it up to a level where you feel pretty darn good about yourself, then you can balance out that ego, balance out that esteem, and take it with you. So you may need to search for something, I don't know, climb a mountain, post it on Facebook saying, look what I did. And then you'll get all kinds of praise. And then take it with you. So there you go. There's my segment on self-esteem. Let's go to the next segment called Ask Paul. Be right back in a moment. So we're here with Asha with GetOutOfTheMess.com. She is an independent associate for Legal Shield, and she always makes us a little bit more intelligent when it comes to some of the major challenges that come along in life. And if you don't believe that's true, just give her a call because she's been through so much of it. So Asha is an independent associate for Legal Shield. And I gave her the reins today to talk about anything she wants. So Asha, go ahead. Tell us what you got today.
So it seems to be that divorce is the rage these days. I hate to say it, but it's true. And everybody apparently needs one. Okay, well, perhaps you don't need one, but maybe you do. In which case, if you are contemplating divorce and all of a sudden you are noticing that there are extra charges on your credit card bills, you should probably file something very quickly because you're going to be responsible for half of everything accrued when you're married. So if you think that your spouse is maybe sneaky, you might want to go ahead and get those papers filed sooner than later. Another thing to think about if you're needing to get a divorce is you don't want to use your attorney as an emotional sounding board. You want to make sure that you are really just dealing with facts. You have your head screwed on when you get there. You do what you need to do and you keep it business. Because I hate to say it, but the judge doesn't care unless there's alimony involved. Other than that, they just don't care about your sad sobbing story. So you want to go ahead and just get to business and get it done. If you can get an uncontested divorce or an amicable divorce from your partner, spouse, because they are going to agree with you on everything from division of debt to division of assets, then get Legal Shield and 90 days later you can get a free uncontested divorce and they'll file it for you. If it's going to be contentious in any way, you should probably put on your hip boots and dive in. Doesn't always go so smoothly. And get Legal Shield because you're going to save 25% off your hourly fees, which over time can add up to big bucks.
All right. Thanks, Asha. Can anyone just go to the Legal Shield website and sign up for this?
No, you can't. Actually, because you have to have an associate. So if you would please use my link, go to getoutofthemess.com. And that will take you to a page where you can sign up. Or call me at 678-355-8777.
All right, welcome back. This is the Ask Paul segment. This is where I read a listener email on the air and do my best to help them with a challenge. Today's letter is from someone I'll call John. Hey, Paul, I love your show. Your drill down method has helped me work through a lot of unrealized feelings. I've been able to heal from a lot of past hurts. Thank you for what you do. And for those of you who've not heard what I call the drill down method. In a nutshell, it's taking something that you feel like, I feel angry, and then asking yourself, well, why do I feel angry? Well, I feel angry because my dad yelled at me or whatever it is. And then I drill down into it, into that, and I go, okay, what about that makes you angry? Well, it makes me angry because he shouldn't be yelling at me. Yeah, but what about that makes you angry? And you might be talking to yourself, what about that makes me angry? And then you might say, well, he has no right to talk to me like that. Okay, so he has no right to talk to you like that. So why does it make you angry? What do you mean, why does it make me angry? I've talked about this on other shows, but what you're doing is you keep drilling down into a feeling or an emotion or a thought until you get to a point where you pick it apart so much that you unravel the glued ball of twine that it is, and you just unravel it until it has no more hold on you, and you just keep drilling down. So I'm not going to get into that exact process right now, but that's the idea, is you drill down by asking yourself questions like, how is that bad? And how is that bad? Oh, so you feel bad when he yells at you, so how is that bad? And then you're going to like yell at yourself going, what do you mean, how is that bad? So it's a neat process. I do it sometimes. It helps me get to the root of some of the things going on inside of me. So that's just the drill down process. Like I said, I talk about it in other episodes, but I wanted to explain it here before I went on. He goes on to say, let me start by saying that I am very happily married. We're going on 12 years of marriage, and I can say that with full confidence that I have found my soulmate. We have 3 awesome kids, and we couldn't be happier. My wife is very attractive, and because of this, she's always getting checked out and hit on. This gets me extremely jealous, and I feel like my stomach is in knots when it happens. I've jokingly told her that I want to lock her away in a tower and never let her leave. Quote, jokingly, a part of me would actually love this. Am I overreacting? Am I being too insecure? She's very good and understanding about this. She doesn't feed it, but she can't help being attractive. What do? Do I just ignore this? I've tried your drill down process and I can't get anywhere with this issue. Thanks in advance and thanks for all you do. Okay, John, thanks for that letter. Thank you for sharing that. And, you know, I get this. I've been in the situation where, I guess I'm still in the situation where people will check out my girlfriend. When I was married, people always checked out my wife. A lot of them, not everyone. But, you know, no matter what our partner, our spouse, our date looks like, someone's going to find them attractive. I'm not saying anyone's unattractive, because everyone has a type of person that they like to look at. In my life, I've had girlfriends that other people found attractive. And, you know, when I was younger, it did bother me. Now, why does it bother you? That's the first question, is why does this bother you? And I'm going to make a guess. Well, because if she's attractive to someone else, there's a chance that she could run away with him or her. Depending on other people's preferences or her preference, you didn't actually say if men checked her out, but I'm going to assume that that is what you're finding somehow threatening. Men are checking out my wife because she's attractive. Well, first of all, congratulations. Good catch. 3 awesome kids, 12 years of marriage. And at what point, and I'm going to ask you a big question here, are you going to trust her? Now, I know you're yelling at the podcast player right now by saying, of course I trust her. It's been 12 years. I've learned to trust her. I know she's not going to leave with those guys. Well, first of all, drill down into that. Do I really trust her? Because if I really trusted her, would I still have to worry about it? Your answer might be, yes, of course, because some really good-looking guy with lots of money might come by and say, hey, baby, get into my car and I'll take you to my mansion and we can sail away on my yacht. And so if that's your answer, then I have to ask you the next question. And this is probably where you want to focus. The next question is, why do you think you're not a catch? Why do you think that you're not good enough for her? Now, I don't know where you stand with that, because this is only a one-sided conversation. But coming from a place where I felt the same way, I can't be good enough for this person because she's so attractive. She's so sexy. She's so intelligent. She's so, you know, whatever. So I must not be good enough. And I have a feeling that that's maybe where you're coming from. I'm not good enough. Why? Is it something that you don't like about your body? Is it something you don't like about your personality? Is it something that you don't trust about yourself? Is it something about your past that you think paints a bad picture of you? Is it something that you're doing now that you think paints a bad picture of you? What about you don't you like? And when you figure that out, you'll probably figure out that you are insecure, and that insecurity leads to feelings of, there are so many people that are better than me. Ouch. I don't want you to think that. In fact, I just talked about this in the last segment, so this is a great segue. You need to maybe fill your ego up a little bit and get it to the point where, damn, I'm a good catch. Get it to the point where you feel confident in yourself, that you can accomplish great things or accomplish challenges or do things that fill you up inside, so that you know that you're good enough for anyone. And your wife may be the most attractive person on earth to you. But imagine if you thought you were good enough to get anyone. I know this sounds narcissistic. This sounds a little over the top. But I tell you what, when you are under the top, when you actually feel bad about yourself in some way, or feel you're not worthy in some way, or feel insecure in some way, then we have to fill that back up in some way. Now, this may not be agreed upon advice across the board. If you listen to other personal growth people out there, gurus or whatever you want to call them, they're going to say, let go of the ego. And, you know, I don't disagree with that. Because it gets to a point where the ego starts to control everything in your life, and then you want to just fill more of that ego, and then you get greedy and cocky and narcissistic or whatever. And so everyone puts a bad label on ego, where I say, you know, ego is great because you can work with it, you can utilize it, as long as you keep it in check, keep it in balance, and don't let it get to your head. That way you can fill these deficits that you have inside of you. Like, how can I feel so confident about myself that when someone else checks out my mate, my partner, my spouse, that it doesn't faze me? Now, my guess is that you have some insecurities in you. Because if you didn't, then this probably wouldn't happen at all. Or if you really don't trust her, or a part of her, like you think that she's going to find someone else, or she's looking for someone else. If that's in you, then that needs to be discussed. That needs to be talked about with your wife. And you need to, you know, speak the truth. You just say, I have a feeling you're going to leave with someone else. I mean, if that's what you really think, then maybe that's what you need to talk about. Could lead to an argument. But I'm still going along the lines of something that I've felt in the past, which is these feelings of insecurity. Because when I had, when I had my first girlfriend, I think it was like a year and a half, 2 years that we went out. Whenever I found out that she talked to a guy, I would, you know, my blood would start to boil. I would be like, what was the conversation about? And she would tell me, and everything always sounded innocent. And I would, you know, step back a little bit, but I would feel like saying, don't talk to guys. And so I think back on that and I go, why did I do that? Why did I not want her to talk to guys? But because now I can look at it and go, well, another guy might take her away. Well, in order for that to happen, there would have to be a formula of me not being good enough or not feeling good enough, because I wouldn't have had the thought otherwise. Her being open to the idea of being with someone else, you know, which is possible. I mean, at the time, I didn't know if she wanted someone else or not. But because I had these feelings of insecurity, maybe she sensed it. I mean, let's look at this in a primal way, where you're with your woman. I am with my woman, and I will be a tough man for my woman. And this works in any relationship. I am going to protect my partner. I'm going to do this for my partner. I want them to feel secure. I want them to know that I love them. Let's just say that you didn't show up like that. That you were more like, I want to make sure that you stay with me. And what do I need to do to make sure that happens? And, I hope that you don't look at other people. I hope you don't think about other people. Do you hear the difference in my voice? There's a big difference. It's the energy. It's the vibe that you give off. And depending on the vibe you give off more of the time, will set in motion how you feel, not only about yourself, but also about the relationship, how you trust that the relationship is going to continue in a good way, and whether you trust what you have. Because I want you to think about it from this perspective. Let's just say that you had full confidence that you were the best catch out there for your wife. I mean, think about it that way. Think about when your wife looks at you, she feels loved, trusted, supported, nurtured, respected. I mean, she feels all these good things, secure. If she honestly feels that way about you, then would you have anything to worry about? Yeah, but Paul, somebody attractive might come along and she might go after them. Do you really think that a lack of attraction to anyone else is the only thing that keeps you together? I can almost guarantee you that she finds other people attractive, just like you find other people attractive. But do you step out and, you know, chase them? If you do, then maybe that's why you're afraid of her stepping out. I don't know. I hope you don't. I hope you want this marriage to last, and I hope it continues to last based on trust and bonding and everything else you want it to be. So if you're 100% honest with her and you're faithful and you expect the same of her and she follows through with that, then you definitely have something wonderful there that you want to continue to grow. So the idea is to see yourself as this person that is the perfect catch for her. And even if you're not perfect, let's just say that you know she loves you and she has no reason to look for anyone else because you provide all those other things. So another question is, what do you think you don't provide for her? That's a good question. Maybe you don't think you make enough money, or maybe your hair is starting to change color, or you're starting to get bald spot and you're self-conscious about it. You know, whatever you're thinking, what do you think you can't provide for her? Because I can almost guarantee you that if you are looking at solely the physical aspect of yourself, like someone better looking could come along, then you're missing like 98% of the picture. Physical attraction has a lot to do with meeting, getting to know each other, sex, other things. But do you really think that physical attraction equals longevity? Most of the time, not. I mean, unless you're just a glutton for punishment, because some people can be very attractive and a jerk. I mean, really bad, bad people, or at least not good for you. And if you stay with someone just because they're attractive and nothing else works, then that's not going to work out. But if you stay with someone because, you know, there are all those other things, as I said, nurturing, supportive, and loving, and respectful, and they're attractive, guess what? You have a good package there. So how does that help you? She's in the grocery store. Some guy is walking down the aisle, and he's like, wow, this chick is hot. I don't think I've ever said the word chick myself, but but I can imagine this. Like, that chick is hot. And then he might even go up and say, hey, can I help you reach the cereal? She goes, no. Or maybe she'll say, yes, I can't reach it, thank you. And hey, do you want to get some coffee? And then she'll say, no, I'm married, or whatever she says. That could happen. And it does happen. It happens to my girlfriend. Maybe not that scenario, but it happens all the time to the people that we love. So because it happens all the time to people that we love in our life, we have to accept that this is not going to stop. It's just not going to stop. The pursuit of romance, the pursuit of love, and the pursuit of more than just those things will always be. They will always exist in our world. So this has to be something that you have to accept that is going to continue. So yes, I can understand you wanting to lock her away in a tower. But what does that do for her? How does that make her feel about her own power to take care of herself? And also, how does that make her feel about how she views your trust in her? I'm not saying this to make you feel bad, because you've probably considered all of this that I'm talking about. I'm just saying these things to help you come to a realization that she is going to be hit on, she is going to be looked at, just like you are, probably for many, many more years. It's just going to happen. This is the natural part of life. We all see attractive people. We all look at them in a certain way. Some of us look away. Some of us keep staring. Some of us have lustful thoughts. Some of us have, oh, I wonder if that person is nice. We have all these different thoughts. So that's just going to happen. You have no choice but to accept that. When you're on Earth and you're among the human species, this is a natural part of what happens. So what that really means is that you have to take the physical attraction aspect out of it, because it's a natural part of everything that we're living today if we are to relate with other humans. So you have to accept that hard truth. The hard truth is, yes, people will be attracted to the person I'm with. It's just going to happen. So let's just take the physical attraction part out. There's no way around it. It's going to happen. What's the other parts? The other parts I talked about is everything else that you provide for her, everything else that you do, everything else that she appreciates about you, everything else she loves about you. Do you really think that the 30-second meeting in a grocery store is going to give anyone enough time to convey all of those other things that she loves about you in a way where she's just becomes infatuated with that person because she immediately sees how loved and respected and nurtured and supported and all those other words that I use. She immediately gets all that from someone that she meets or sees on the street, in the store, anywhere she goes. That doesn't happen in 30 seconds. I know, love at first sight. But I tell you what, someone who's happily married, I mean, if you guys really do have a stable relationship and you love each other, then that's a good bonding, forward momentum kind of thing. You're going to keep going at it. So if you really have that, then you've got nothing to worry about because you're showing up and you're doing it. Now, the flip side comes. The flip side is she wants things from you and you don't want to give them. Please wash your dish every time you're done and you forget or you don't do it. Please take out the garbage when you can and you decide not to or you forget. Would you please clean the windows? Would you please do this? I mean, things that might be kind of mundane, if they're ignored or she feels not listened to or disrespected enough, guess what? It's not that other people become more attractive. It's that you become less attractive. So what does that mean? That means you kind of have to work at it sometimes. If you've been married for 12 years and you've taken advantage of all these little things and you don't think it's a problem, well, if that's the case, then it might be a problem. If you're more of a taker and not a giver, and I'm talking about all areas of the relationship, then that kind of stuff can build up and come to a point where you become less attractive. So what does that mean? That means that if you're less attractive, then the idea of being with you is less compelling. And let me tell you this, when you have insecurities, they aren't always seen as attractive. That doesn't mean you're not supposed to have insecurities. I have insecurities. But if they're insecurities that you guys have talked about and nothing's changed, that might be something to focus on. Instead of turning on the TV and watching a football game, maybe making an appointment with a counselor or a therapist, or buying a book or watching a video on what your insecurity is about, or, you know, even listening to this show. I'm not saying that insecurities make you unattractive. I'm saying that the ones that are talked about that bother, let's just say that they bother her, and you still have them, or she supports you and she knows you're going through some stuff and you feel insecure about some stuff. If that continues, it is possible. I'm just saying it's possible that there might be a perception of you not being as robust, attractive, something. This is a big maybe, might, not an absolute, just a possibility. So if there's a continuing issue in your relationship, whether it's an insecurity or not, if it's a continuing issue, anything that triggers one or both of you and makes you feel bad, and maybe you give each other the silent treatment or whatever upsets you, if that's a continuing issue, then you become less attractive. You become less compelling. You become less magnetic. And when that happens, then the bond weakens between you. And yes, other people at that point can appear more attractive. Other people at that point can be more compelling, more magnetic. And we don't want that to happen. I mean, if we really care about this relationship, we don't want that to happen. So what do we have to do? And again, that's a big maybe. That's just a possibility that may or may not even be true. But I do know that it is true when you have a consistent issue or issues that just don't seem to go away, that makes you less and less attractive. Not that you are. It's just that some people don't want to continue dealing with the same problem over and over again. It's just like if I came to you and said, "Hey, John, I have a flat tire today." Oh, you're like, "Oh, I'll help you out. Great." And I'll be like, "Thanks so much." And then the next day I said, "Hey, John, I have another flat tire." And you laugh and you go, "Oh, come on, I'll help you out. Come on, buddy." And then the third day I said, "Hey, John, I got a flat tire again." And you'd be like, "What? What are you doing? Driving through a construction site?" "I don't know. I drive through anything I see. I don't really care." "Well, fine, I'll help you out. But you know what? This is the last time." And then the fourth day, "Hey, John, I got a flat tire." And you're starting to feel like this is ridiculous. And then the fifth day and the sixth day and the seventh day, you're going to reach your breaking point. You're going to feel like I'm not as wonderful as a friend as I used to be. I'm just always maybe needy, or I'm upsetting you in some way, and it just keeps wearing you down. This is what consistent problems in relationships do. They wear you down. They make your partner less compelling, less attractive. That's why it's so important to communicate and express these hard truths and say what's on your mind and get it out so you have something to work with. So you get the ideas. If you have these issues going on, then let's work through these issues, because once you do, then there's nothing triggering you. There's none of the old stuff coming back over and over again. And when you get to that point, boy, everything just strengthens. Everything just, you just want to be with each other. You just want to spend more time together. But if the issues are there, that's what I'm talking about. So let me share with you what I did in your situation. When I felt insecure, when I was worried that people were looking at my wife when I was married and, you know, is she going to leave with them? Is she going to be more attracted to them? What I did was decide to show up more, in the sense of, I'm starting to get a spare tire around my belly. Maybe I should work out a little bit more. Now, hear me out before you think this is so shallow and it's not about physical attraction. Just hear me out for a second. All right, so I'm going to go work out a little bit. Now I'm showing up in a way that I might think is attractive to my partner. Again, this isn't a solution. This is just one tiny little component of a bigger picture I'm painting here. So what's the next thing? Well, I wonder if I can be better in bed. So what I'm going to do is make the bedroom time, the night time, those special times, all about her. I'm going to be more of a giver. I'm going to make sure that she is completely satisfied. So that means that you give more. And it's not just sex. It's also rubbing her feet and rubbing her back and just showing that you are paying attention and you are really appreciating her. Don't make it about you. You will experience the benefits by making it about her. And this works in reverse too, for anyone. Man with a woman with a man and man, woman and woman, doesn't matter. Make it about the other person. Because if this is truly an equal, strong, and wonderful relationship, she's going to want to make it about you too. But that's not the point. That's not what you're trying to get at. So you just want to make it about her and do that as often as you can. Again, this is one tiny component of a bigger picture. Don't jump to any conclusions yet about where I'm going with this. Third thing, take a leap of faith in yourself, saying that I'm such a damn good catch that no one else could possibly be a threat. This is a leap of faith. I know it is, and you may not even believe it. But I want you to realize how that feels when you try that on. Try that on. Say, I'm such a damn good catch. No one else could possibly be a threat. I'm such a damn good catch. How can anybody be a threat? Again, it's a little narcissistic, but if you're in deficit there, if you're insecure, then it's okay to fill that void, fill that deficit a little bit with some ego, just to balance it out so you can get to a more secure place. And this leads to the fourth thing and the picture I'm painting here. The fourth thing is, be incredibly grateful that of the billions of men on this planet, she wants to be with you. She wants to extend her bloodline, her genes with you by making kids. She wants to spend her time. She wants to live with you. Of all the people in the world, she wants to live with you. What does that mean? That means you are so extremely special for someone to want to do that with you. I remember having that thought when I had my first long-term girlfriend. I was like, I can't believe it. Of all the people that she could spend her free time with, she chooses me? I mean, I was surprised, but it really gave me a sense of appreciation for the idea that someone would want to give up all their individual free time to be with me. I mean, what does that mean? It means that I must be a pretty darn good catch of all people that she could be with. At the time, I was like, I don't think I'm that attractive. I don't have a body that I don't feel like I could show off and, you know, be the one of those guys at the pool that walks around with his chest out saying, hey, everyone, check me out. But I just didn't feel that way about myself. So I'm thinking, why would she want to be with me? But I transformed that question into a realization of, wow, of all the people that have the best bodies, the most intelligence, they have degrees on their walls, and they're making a lot of money. Of all those people, she chose me? Again, I answer like it's a shock. She chose me. Wow. What does that mean? It means that when we find someone that we want to be with, we want to be with them. Otherwise, we would be with someone else. I mean, that's a simple explanation, really. She could be with anyone she wants, but she comes home to you. She's with you. She shares herself with you. She shares her experiences with you, her secrets with you, her body with you, and no one else. And she wants to do that. She could do that with anyone she wants, but she chooses to do it with you. So the idea is just to be grateful that of all the people in the world that she could do this with, she's doing it with you. That's mind-blowing. Even now I think about this. That's mind-blowing to me. Like, my girlfriend is so independent. I mean, she spent 8 years pretty much single, dating here and there, but she chooses to want to be with me every single day. I make it sound awful. Every single day she wants to be with me, but she does. And I make sure, and there's two angles I want you to see here. One is I make sure that I keep showing up and show her the best damn boyfriend she could possibly ever have. It's not like I'm overcompensating or trying to influence her in any way. I actually enjoy pleasing her. I actually enjoy doing things for her. It doesn't mean I do it every day. It doesn't mean I always say yes to everything. I'm not like people pleasing. I just like seeing her happy. And guess what? If you like seeing your wife happy, you're going to do things that support that happiness. You've heard my definition of love, right? When you support the other person's happiness. That's it. Support her happiness. What would make her happy? Support that in any way that you can. And the other angle is the bigger picture that I've been trying to paint here, getting too slowly, is when you keep showing up and making things about her, supporting her happiness, and being the best damn you can be, it's going to fulfill you enough so that you're no longer at all insecure, in the relationship at least, what I'm talking about now. As you do all these things that I mentioned, you'll become less and less insecure because you'll keep showing up, and it's going to create a pattern in you and fill up those deficits that may be lingering in there. Because what happens when you keep doing this is your wife sees it, feels it, senses it, and thinks she's a queen. She's going to think that she's being treated like this queen. Like, wow, can't believe this. Again, not from a people pleaser. Like, I'm going to do this to influence this situation. No, because you're doing it because you love seeing her happy. When you love seeing someone happy, then you do things that you know will make them happy. If they're not happy about the things you do, then you don't do those things. It works the other way too. If you do things that make them unhappy, they're going to be more and more unhappy as you do those things. So this is everything I know, well, probably most of what I know, about how to get out of this cycle of jealousy or feeling threatened. Because that's no way to live, to always think that she might run off with someone, or I'm jealous because this person has more money, has better looks, has this, has that. That's just, it really is not worth thinking about. Because the bigger you make your shoes, the harder it is for anyone else to fill them. I hope this helps you, John. This is something I've been actually wanting to talk about for a while because, I don't know, maybe I did talk about this at one time, but it does bring to mind something I feel about this today. Like if my girlfriend comes home and says that, you know, she was hit on at the store or when she was out and about, she was at a meeting or something like that. I go, really? That's my first question is, really? Who was it? What was it? What happened? Tell me. I want to know the story. And it's not coming from a jealous place. It's coming from a, wow, I can't wait to hear this because I'm so confident in our relationship and I know it's not going to go anywhere. So this ought to be fun because I know that she's going to respond in a way of, oh no, I'm taken. So I just want to hear how she handled it. And it's fun because she'll say what happened and I'll go, ha, ha, ha. And I'll think to myself, well, he'll never fill my shoes. That's for sure. Because of all this stuff that I've told you about. And on top of that, I know that she also gets a little ego boost when that happens. She may not admit it, but I know she must. I'm just making a guess here, but it's got to be true. Because I know when it happens to me, which is rarely, if someone finds me attractive and they actually say something or intimate that she might be attracted to me, I am totally flattered. I am like, my ego gets boosted. I feel the blood rush through me. I blush. I just feel like, wow. And then I go home with an extra skip in my step, feeling like, wow, I still got it. That feels good. Again, that's rare. So I don't look for it. I don't think about it. I try not to even present that persona that I'm this guy looking for a mate. I just do my own thing. I'm in my own head and sure, I'll see attractive people, but rarely I can't remember the last time someone approached me and really shown interest, although my girlfriend says I'm a little naive. So maybe it does happen more often than not. But think about it that way. If you're really supporting her happiness and she gets a boost from someone who looks at her or tries to pick her up. I mean, if she gets a boost, she may not. She may feel uncomfortable about it. And if that's the case, then you have nothing to worry about. I don't even know why you wrote the email to me, because if that's the case, then you know that there's just no chance. But, you know, somebody gives her a boost and she comes home and says, oh, you know, somebody tried to pick me up. You can go, yeah, that's my girl, first of all. And find out if it lifted her spirits at all. Because if she's happier knowing that she's still attractive, wow, that's a great thing to support, isn't it? If she's happier knowing that someone found her appealing or sexy or whatever. I mean, a lot of women don't like that. A lot of women don't like the attention. But if she does come home and say, you know, this happened, and you can ask her, did it boost you up? Did it feel good knowing that you've still got it? She might say no, or she might say yes, but it's all about supporting her happiness. That's where I'm going with that. I know that when somebody finds me interesting, entertaining, attractive, it definitely boosts me up. So for women, it's a different story, because you know, there's a lot of people out there that they don't even want to associate with. She may love it. She may hate it. It doesn't matter, as long as you're supporting her happiness. And final note on this, I find it even more fun when I'm with her and someone finds her attractive. You don't always see it, but I love it, because I just put my arm around her and I'm like, yep, you can't have her. Because she's mine and she loves me and she's going to stay with me. And John, that's the attitude I want you to have too. So again, I hope this helps. Thank you so much for writing, and thanks for listening to the show. I appreciate you. We're going to end this episode, and I'll be right back and mention a few things, and then I'll give you my closing thoughts. Be right back. Thank you for listening to another episode of The Overwhelmed Brain. I want to thank Asha with getoutofthemess.com. It's always great to hear her voice on the episode, because sometimes I'll do the getoutofthemess.com ads with her and sometimes I'll do them without her. But I always like having her on and hearing what she has to say next. She always kind of surprises me. And some stuff I have to leave on the cutting room floor when she messes up, and she might swear. She might throw a curse word in there. Gotta love her. So if you want her to connect you with the freedom to be comfortable no matter what life sends your way, and you're in the U.S. or Canada, visit getoutofthemess.com or call 678-355-8777. And let me just quickly mention the TOB patron program. I didn't talk about it in the episode, but if you're not a patron member, I think I have, what, 22 episodes in there now. Those are 22 episodes that you haven't heard. Some of them are 5 minutes long, some are 40 minutes long, and some are interviews with me regarding certain subject matters that sometimes we talk about here and sometimes we don't. But I don't play them on the public airwaves. I put them in the patron program. That's the membership site. And that's where you can get private episodes, workbooks and worksheets, and group coaching. In fact, today, Sunday, the 9th of October, 2016, we're having a private group coaching session on personal boundaries. That'll be a good one. So if you're listening to this today, the group coaching session might be going on as we speak. So if you want to join the patron program, there's different levels, anywhere from $3 a month to $29 a month. Very affordable, very reasonable. And you'll get new updates, new episodes, new worksheets. Would love to see you over there. Go to patron.theoverwhelmedbrain.com and connect with me on the inside. And to those patron members who have been waiting for the next episode, let me just tell you real quick. I was involved in a charity project, and then I had to finish editing on a book, so I plan on dumping a whole bunch of new episodes on you really quick here. Sorry for the delay. Anyway, go to patron.theoverwhelmedbrain.com. And whether you're a patron or not, I want to thank you if you have purchased one of my books or worksheets or use the Amazon link at theoverwhelmedbrain.com. The Amazon link is the easiest way to give back. So if you've been listening for months or years, use that Amazon link every time you shop. Your shopping habits are making a difference, and they help pay for the operating costs of this show. And finally, thank you to Kevin McLeod of Incompetech.com for some of the music transitions in The Overwhelmed Brain. And in conclusion, let me just mention this. That letter I read from John, that brought back some memories, because I remember when I was with that first real girlfriend that I had, I was 18 or 19, and I remember how jealous I used to get. And in one of my episodes, I talked about how I hid in the bushes after her work. And I watched her come out of the building because I wanted to see the guy that she would talk to. I mean, I would go over her house after school. This is when we were still in school. And she would tell me about this guy that she knows at work, and she would talk to him. I'm like, in my mind going, who's this guy? So one night, I hid in the bushes like a stalker, like a paranoid, jealous boyfriend that you definitely didn't want to have around. But there I was in the bushes watching, and she came out and she was talking to him. And I was like, oh, what are they talking about? And then they walked around the building, and then they came back and they were still talking. I'm like, why did they have to walk around the building? What's that all about? And I had all these crazy thoughts, and I didn't approach them. I just left. And then later I called her and I said, so what did you do after work? And she said, well, I just talked to, I forget his name, Bill. I just talked to Bill for a while and then I went home. And I was like, you did, huh? Well, how long did you talk to him for? And she's like, I don't know, 5 minutes probably. I'm like, 5 minutes. You know what? That was 15 minutes. I remember an early episode of the Overwhelmed Brain. I actually put this to an audio skit where I sounded like the devil. No, that was 15 minutes. I know it because I was there. And she's like, you were there? And I was like, yes, I know what happened. I was watching and I saw you walk around the building. It was a good 15, 20 minutes. And she goes, well, all we did was talk. And what were you doing there? And I was like, because I didn't trust you. Oh, really? And I'll tell you what, after that point, she didn't trust me. Why would she? Why would anyone trust someone that does something like that? I mean, think about that. If you are encroaching on their personal turf, their individuality even, because there's a lack of trust, guess what's going to happen in reverse? There's going to be a lack of trust from them. Because, oh, you don't trust me? Well, that bond will diminish, that love will weaken, and the relationship will go downhill. This is what happens when you allow jealousy to dictate your actions in a relationship. And you don't want that to happen. You want to get rid of jealousy. You want to move past jealousy to the point of, I am a great catch, and I'm not worried. And if I am worried, maybe this isn't the right relationship for me, because I'm thinking about them going off with someone else. And if I'm thinking about that, guess what? I don't trust them. And if that's true, if you don't trust them, then maybe you shouldn't be with them. Trust is a major part, if not one of the highest components of a relationship. If you don't have trust, everything kind of falls apart from there. It dissolves. So if you don't trust, or you think that they don't trust you, well, why would that be? Why wouldn't they trust you? What do you do in your life that others might find untrustworthy? These are all philosophical questions. But hopefully you have a great relationship, or if you're not in a relationship, you're ready for one. Or maybe you're not ready for one. Like my mom, I'm like, are you ever going to get into another relationship now that he's gone? And she's like, hell no. It's like, I want to enjoy my single time for quite a while. I can't even think about getting into another relationship. I want to know what it's like to be with me. Who am I without this person in my life? So no matter where you are in the spectrum of all relationships, either be with someone and be happy and trusting and supportive and loving and nurturing with them, or be with yourself and be loving and trusting and supportive and nurturing to yourself. Because I would rather have either one of those scenarios than to be with someone and not loving and not trusting and not feeling supported, not feeling respected. You don't want to do that. You are worthy of love and support and respect and trust, all of that. So if you're not in the best of situations right now, do me a favor. Keep your mind open and step into your power and be firm in your decisions and actions so that you can create the life you want. Always take steps to grow and evolve. You're powerful beyond measure. And above all, and this is something I absolutely know to be true about you, you are amazing.
Okay, I'm back. Let's get that gum out of your hair. Oh, you're not moving. Well, I guess you don't want to be disturbed.